Welcome, everybody. We're in the middle of the introduction, the monumental and historic introduction of the Rambam, Maimonides, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon, to his magnum opus, to the Mishneh Torah, Yad HaChazaka of the Rambam. Last class, we explored the first section of the Rambam's introduction. We are in the middle of it after he finished enumerating the 40 generations from Reb Ashi, the person who composed or began to compose the Babylonian Talmud, the Talmud Bavli, all the way up till Moshe Rabbeinu, who was number 39, and number 40, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rambam says, Mipi HaGvura, received from Hashem, and we're holding after the words, Nimtza Shekula MeHashem Elokei Yisrael, meaning that everything comes ultimately from Elokei Yisrael, from the God of Israel. So, very brief summary of what the Rambam taught us. The Rambam discussed at length the transmission of how the oral tradition, the Torah Shebaal Peh, was transmitted all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu, 40 generations progressively. And the Rambam demonstrates how the tradition, the Kabbalah, the Mesorah, is so airtight. There's literally, it's an unbroken chain. And this is critical to understand the entire structure of Halacha. And actually, I find that most people are unaware of how powerful this is, of how serious this is, of how authentic a system we're dealing with, because the ear tightness is so important to understand that there's no room. The immune system of the Mesorah, of the Halacha, is so powerful that it's an immune system that spits out and that does not allow foreign invaders to manipulate it and hijack it and distort it. It's something that a lot of people, even people who grow up in a yeshiva system and in a yeshiva world, don't realize, because we don't spend so much time educating our children and our youth with the background, the context of how the system works. You know, the back end of the program, we deal with the software, we don't always deal with the hardware, which I think is sometimes problematic. So an introduction like this of the Rambam opens us up to the ear tightness of this tradition. And the Rambam's basic point was how Moshe Rabbeinu, when he gave the Torah, he didn't only give a text, he gave a full elucidation and a commentary of the text of the Chumash, explaining the details and nuances of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. And this, he taught, it was the part that he wrote. This is the Chumash, Chamisha Chumashe Torah, the Sefer Torah, and one which he placed in the Ark. And then there was the whole dimension of it, most of it, which he actually taught orally, which we call Torah Shebaal Peh. And the Rambam explains how he taught this to all the Jewish people. And he taught it especially to his successor, his student Yehoshua, and to Elazar, the son of Aaron, and to Pinchas, who later bring it to the next generation, and they teach it to the sages. And here the tradition goes on from generation to generation, and the Rambam continues all the way down through the hundreds of years of the Jewish people in the first Commonwealth, the first Beis HaMikdash, the destruction, the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, the hundreds of years of the second Commonwealth, the second Beis HaMikdash, until its destruction, the days of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, even though he doesn't mention the destruction of the first and the second Beis HaMikdash. I'm saying that just to give the context of history, and I think there's a reason he doesn't mention it, because his point is that throughout all of the vicissitudes of Jewish history, through all of the dramatic fluctuations and transformations and transitions from one extreme to another extreme, the tradition, the Mesorah, Torah Shebaal Peh, remained a constant. It remained something that endured and was consistent from generation to generation, despite the upheavals and despite the turmoil and despite savage suffering and agony and destruction and relocation and exile and return. But there remained this unbroken chain of teacher to student and student, relationship of teacher to student and student to teacher, and so generation after generation, where the student of one generation becomes the master and the teacher of the next generation of students and so forth. Until he reaches the era of the man he calls Rabbeinu HaKadosh, our holy teacher, also known as Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Rabbi Judah the Prince, who is a great-great-grandson of Hillel the Elder. And the Rambam goes through that chain, and Hillel, of course, received from the previous generations, and so back all the way to Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu HaKadosh does something that was never done before. He decides that it's time to compile everything in a text, which he calls the Mishnah and the Rambam explains at length, which we did in last class, why Rabbeinu HaKadosh felt this way, and his students also composed many texts. He discussed Rav, Sifra, and Sifri, and Rabbi Shia, Tosefta, and Rabbi Chia, Braise, and Rabbi Yochanan, a student of Rebbe, when he was a child, when he was young, is the one who begins to compose the Talmud Yerushalmi around 300 years after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. As I said, the destruction of Beis HaMikdash was in the year 70 after the Common Era. According to the Rambam, the Yerushalmi was edited or written or composed approximately in the year 370 after the Common Era. He says approximately, it could be 380, 390, 400, but approximately 300 years after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And so, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the editor of the Mishnah, has many students who also compose texts, and from there, the tradition continues. Rabbeinu HaKadosh of Yehuda HaNasi is the last generation of Tanoim, and then he has students like Rabbi Yochanan, Rav, Shmuel, who are the first generation of Amirayim, and they continue to transmit the tradition to the next generation until, just a few generations later, we come to a man named Rav Ashi. And Rav Ashi, as the Rambam put it, is number 40. He puts Rav Ashi and Ravina, who received the tradition from Rava, and then Mar Bar Rav Ashi, the son of Rav Ashi, who received the tradition from Rav Ashi and Ravina. And therefore, the Rambam summarizes, we have 40 generations from Rav Ashi all the way to Moshe Rabbeinu. And just as the Rambam went, he climbed the ladder downward from Moshe Rabbeinu down to Rav Ashi, he now returns and he climbs the ladder upward from Rav Ashi back to Moshe Rabbeinu. I asked the question why the Rambam does this. It seems redundant and superfluous. Everybody could just go backwards and do the calculations on their own. Different people presented different very interesting answers. I'm not sure what the answer is. It seems to me maybe on one level, the Rambam is trying to demonstrate through different ways, again, how airtight the tradition is. It's not just that the generation passed it down to another one, and another one, and another one, and another one, all the way down from Moshe Rabbeinu to Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi is this passive recipient of a glorious tradition and commentary and an approach and interpretations and so forth. The Rambam also explaining that every student experienced and understood how monumental he was in this unbreakable chain, how he really constituted an indispensable note in this ongoing symphony of Judaism and of Torah throughout the generations. It's not just I'm living in a particular milieu and I happen to be a student of a great teacher and I'm learning from him. No, I become aware that I am learning from him, and he received from the person who taught him, who received from the person and the court, the Beis Din, wasn't only one, it was many people, from him, all the way back to Yehoshua ben Nun, Elazar, Pinchas, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, who receives it from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. So there is an active, dynamic interchange and interplay, what you would call Milmaila Lamata and Milmata Lamaila. The flow goes from higher to low, and it also goes back, where each student understands and appreciates. You're not just somewhere in a link and you happen to have a teacher. You appreciate where your teacher came from and where he came from and he came from and he came from and he came from. So you see yourself directly as part of a continuum, a glorious, magnificent, historic continuum which begins with Moshe Rabbeinu, who received from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. So the Rambam wants to emphasize how it works in both directions. And it's important to understand here, even though the Rambam doesn't give years and dates, but it's worthwhile to mention it, just we should be able to appreciate it in our own lives and where we are today in Jewish history, because Moshe Rabbeinu, the Jewish people, according to our tradition, left Egypt and received the Torah in the year 2448 since creation. That's 2,448 years since creation. Beis Alafim Tav Mem Ches. The destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash happens in the year 3830. Gimel Alafim Tav Lamed. Again, some say it was 28, 29, or 30. In the secular calendar, would be the year 68 or 69 or 70 after the Common Era. Let's keep it 70 for now, just because it's a round number. So 70 after the Common Era is the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. How many years is that after Matan Torah? That's close to 1800 years, right? That's 1782 years. 82 years. Memches. Right, it's almost 14, it's almost, I'm sorry, it's almost 1400 years. It's 1382 years since Matan Torah. Beis Alafim Tav Memches, the Gimel Alafim Tav Memches is 1000 years. And then you have 5, 4, 8, 6, 4, 8, 7, 8, almost 1400 years, a little less, 1400 minus 18 years. That's 1382 years. I hope I'm making the calculation correct. So that's almost 1400 years from Moshe Rabbeinu till the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, which is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now you have 300 years later, the Talmud Yerushalmi is composed. That's 300 years later. That's around 1700 years from Moshe Rabbeinu. And then you have, as the Rambam is going to say, 100 years later, approximately, the Babylonian Talmud is composed. That's almost 1800 years from Matan Torah. So from Moshe Rabbeinu to Rav Ashi is 40 generations, which is close to 2 millennia, around almost 1800 years. And you have 40 people who represent the tradition. It's not just these 40 individuals. They are snapshots of generations of Jews who were disciples and students. Which means, if we look at Jewish history today, the majority of Jewish history, almost 1800 years, is from Moshe Rabbeinu to Reb Ashi. Now, from Reb Ashi till today is less than 1800 years. It's around 1500 years, maybe a little more. So the majority of Jewish history happens simply in years in this first 40 generations. But the same is true about our generations, because this tradition continues. From Reb Ashi, it continues. And it would be fascinating to make a list from Reb Ashi till our very generation today. And my speculation is that it wouldn't be even be 40. It would be less than 40. So we see here how airtight the Messiah is. Every single one of us sitting here at this class and learning Rambam is an active part in this unbreakable, airtight, indestructible tradition that the Rambam is bringing to life here. We're not only learning the words of the Rambam in the 12th century, 1100s, when the Rambam is writing these works. We're soon going to see the exact year when he wrote this introduction, because he's going to mention it soon. But we are also part of this active tradition that goes back before the Rambam, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. So there is an active participation and partnership in the transference of energy and information and wisdom and divinity and Torah from generation to generation, all the way down from Moshe to Reb Ashi, and then it continues. You can go. Reb Ashi taught his son, and his son taught, etc., etc., all the way down to this time. And this time, again, from Reb Ashi to now is less in years than from Reb Ashi to Moshe Rabbeinu by Matan Torah. So, we have the 40 generations, Moshe to Reb Ashi. Reb Ashi received from Rava, Rava received from his Rebbe all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Rambam said, Nimtza Shekula Me'ashem Elokei Yisrael. Now let's continue inside. Kol Elu HaChachamim HaNiskarim. All of these sages that we mentioned, the Rambam mentioned so many names, and I know for many of you who learned this the first time, it's very confusing. Somebody called me and says, so much information in one day. I urge you to review it and review it again, review it a few times. And after you review it a few times, you'll see that you'll actually get it, because it's very organized, it's systemized, it's structured. As I said, it's very airtight. There's no manipulation here. It's very, very authentic. And the Rambam wants you to understand how this works. So therefore, review it again. Review the previous year, the beginning of the introduction again, with me or on your own, however you want to do it, or with another teacher. So kol elu hachachamim haniskarim, all these great sages, hem gedolei hadoros. They were not just wise people, they were leaders of generations. They were the great sages of generations. Mehem, many of them were Rosh Yeshivas. They were heads of yeshivas. They had academies of learning where they trained and they taught and they mentored and they guided thousands or hundreds of students. Umehem, some of them were Rashi Golius. They were the heads of the Jewish communities in the exiles. So they were also political leaders. They were leaders. They were influencers. They had a lot of clout, sometimes on behalf of the government. They were the heads of communities, not just of academies, of places of learning, but of communities. Umehem is Sanhedrin Gedoyla. Many of them were members of the Great Sanhedrin. The Great Sanhedrin is the central Jewish Supreme Court, which numbered already from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu 71 members. And these were 71 of the brightest and the greatest of the Jewish community. We're going to get, God willing, we're going to get to Rambam, Hilchas Sanhedrin, the laws of Sanhedrin. That's a little bit far away, but not so far away, where the Rambam will discuss exactly how they chose, how they nominated somebody to the Supreme Court. But in every generation, it was 71 members. This dissolved at some point in history. He's going to discuss that as well soon. So some of them were members of the Sanhedrin. Uvi'imahem, but with them, b'chol dor b'dor, in every generation, alafim u'revavos sheshamu mehem, thousands of Jews and myriads, revavos, 10,000. So revavos are myriads, tens of thousands of Jews who heard, who learned from them. V'imahem, and with them, Ravina v'Rav Ashi, heim soif chachmei ha-Talmud. K'sheshamu mehem v'imahem. There were thousands and myriads of students who heard from them, who heard their teachings, and with them. From them or with them. Students or colleagues. Says the Rambam, Ravina v'Rav Ashi, heim soif chachmei ha-Talmud. I know that sometimes different versions may have slight variations in text, like soif chachmei ha-Gemara or soif chachmei ha-Talmud. I'm using one version of the Rambam's introduction, but for Maaseh Rav Kook, the Mishnah Torah of Maaseh Rav Kook, Rambam Lam, but I know that there's sometimes variations. I see here another Rambam where it says Gemara, so just don't get confused. The theme is the same, but you'll sometimes have a change of words because of the manuscripts were copied, and there's sometimes a change here or there. Ravina and Rav Ashi, heim soif chachmei ha-Talmud. Ravina and Rav Ashi are considered the end of the era of the sages of the Talmud, which we call the Gemara. Rav Ashi, hu shechibed ha-Talmud ha-Bavli be'eretz Shinar, achar shechibed Rav Yochanan ha-Talmud ha-Yerushalmi b'kimay me'er shana. It was Rav Ashi who composed, who authored the Babylonian Talmud in the land of Shinar. Shinar is Babylonia, present-day Iraq. After Rabbi Yochanan composed the Jerusalem Talmud, approximately 100 years. This means that according to the Rambam, the approximate date of the composition of the Babylonian Talmud should be around 470 after the Common Era. Because he said before that the Talmud Yerushalmi was composed around 100 years after the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash, which was in the year 70. 100 years later, 300 years later would be around the year 370 Common Era. Again, the Rambam says give or take, he says approximately. And the Babylonian Talmud was composed a century later, so you're dealing with approximately the year 470 after the Common Era. Again, it could be 480, 490, 500, which are numbers that are given in some places, or a little earlier, but approximately that time, the end of the 5th century after the Common Era, or if you want in the Jewish calendar, it would be the year 4130. 400 years after the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash in the year 3830, so you have 300 years later the Talmud Yerushalmi, and 400 years later, approximately the year 4130, the composition of Talmud Bavli, the famous Gemara Babylonian Talmud, through Rev Ashi. V'inyan shnei ha-Talmudim, what is the function of these two Talmuds, of these two Gemaras? Pirush divrei ha-Mishnah u'bir amukai seho. It's the elucidation of the words of the Mishnah and explaining its depths. The Mishnah that was composed hundreds of years earlier through Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was the Rebbe of Rabbi Yochanan when Rabbi Yochanan was a child. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi composed the Mishnah approximately 150 years after the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash. Approximately. Which means, if the Second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi composed the Mishnah around 220. Around. The Rambam doesn't give the exact year or date. But that's the estimated time where Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi composed the Mishnah. Could be a little later, could be a little earlier, but it continues then. It begins around that era, around 200, 220 after the Common Era. That's the Mishnah that we discussed earlier. But now you have a Talmud Yerushalmi, then you have a Talmud Bavli. What is this? So the Rambam says it's to explain what is the Mishnah, to unravel the depth. The depth, the intricacies, the nuances, the details of every single Mishnah. But not only that. And all the ideas that were developed and innovated in every single Jewish court in Sanhedrin from the days of Rabbeinu HaKadosh until the Talmud Yerushalmi and Talmud Bavli was composed, which is a few hundred years. So since then, a lot of new insights. It's not just explaining what the Mishnah says. It's also discussing all the ideas that were developed and innovated during the subsequent years after Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Now, says the Rambam, Umishnei HaTalmud, If somebody masters both Talmuds, the Yerushalmi and the Bavli, Umina Toisefta, and also masters the Toisefta, remember that is the addition to the Mishnah that was composed by a man named Reb Hoshi, who was a student of Reb Yehuda HaNasi. Umi Sifra V'Sifri, and from the Midrashim Sifra and Sifri, which is a commentary on Sefer Bamidbar and Dvarim that the Rambam said earlier was composed by Rav, the great Rav, who was a student of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Mikulam, from all of these texts, Yisboyer, you will figure out, you will learn, Ha'asur v'hamuter, what is forbidden, what is permitted, Ha'tameh v'hatari, what is impure and pure, Ha'chayah v'hapater, who is guilty and who is exonerated, Ha'pasol v'hakasher, what is disqualified and what is qualified, what is kosher, K'moshe etiku ish mipi yish mipi moshe Rabbeinu Misinai. The way they transmitted it, the way they taught it, person to person, all the way back to the mouth of Moshe Rabbeinu in Har Sinai. So you were going to learn all of these details of halacha, the way it was received one person from another in the chain extending back to Moshe Rabbeinu. What are all these terms the Rambam says? Asr, mutter, tamei, tari, chayev, pater, pasal, kasher. I think it's worthy just to clarify what it means. Forbidden and permissible would be, this food is permissible, this food is forbidden. That's called asur and mutter. Or this malacha, this act is forbidden on Shabbos, this act is permissible on Shabbos. Clean and unclean, pure and impure, we will say, is this vessel is pure, this vessel is impure. This person is pure, this person is impure. This condition creates impurity, this condition doesn't create impurity. This was a major part of Jewish life, Tumah and Tara. Today it's not so applicable in contemporary times, much more limited form, but in ancient times it was essential to the fabric and the daily routine of Jewish life, especially in the Holy Land. We're going to get to that section in Rambam where everything will be outlaid, God willing, in an encyclopedic and very organized and systemized form, because I know most people, when they hear the words Tumah and Tara, they shut down. But that's pure and impure. Then you have Chayev and Pater, guilty or exempt, right? We go to court, you say that I owe you $1,000, am I guilty, am I not guilty? And finally, Pasul Kasher. Is this person qualified to be a witness, or is this person disqualified? Is he puzzled to be a witness? Is this animal qualified to be an offering, or is this animal disqualified? Is this meat of the carbon qualified or not qualified? These types of questions, that those are the categories. So the Rambam says, when you master all these texts, you'll realize and you'll figure out everything that is either permitted or forbidden, clean or unclean, guilty or innocent, kosher or not kosher, disqualified or qualified. The way it was received person to person to person back to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai. But that's only one thing you're going to discover. You're going to learn all the traditions that were presented orally. Gam Yisboyer, man, but you'll also learn something else. Dvarim shegazru chachamim unavim shebechal dor v'dor las asyag l'tayra. There were edicts, things that sages and prophets in every generation made, issued, they instituted in the Jewish world in order to create a fence around Torah. Where did they get this authority from? So let's give an example. We don't eat chicken and milk. The Torah doesn't say not to eat chicken and milk. The Torah's prohibition is against eating meat and milk, not chicken and milk. If you remember in the Gemara, Rabbi Yossi HaGalili ate chicken and milk. This is something that the sages prohibited as a fence around Torah. You know, sometimes if you have a very dangerous zone, you have a Manhattan Project, you have a nuclear reactor, it's extremely dangerous, or something else that can be a hazard, you build a fence. Why do you build a fence? Around a cliff, they're going to build a fence. Why? Don't jump off the cliff. Problem is, you don't want people getting close to it. So you build a fence. That's called a Syag L'Torah. The sages in every generation who understood how serious and how hazardous and harmful something that the Torah prohibits can be for the Jew and for the Jewish soul, they created a fence so you don't even get close. So, but where do they have the authority to do this? If Moshe gave it over from God, great. If Moshe didn't get it over from God, where do you have the authority to do this? So many things on Shabbos. Take on Shabbos, for example, something called Muktzah. I'm not allowed to move a laptop from one place to another place in my house, right? Or a telephone, or a computer, or a video camera, or a calculator. Okay, Allah Vashallah. All these things, it's not a problem. I can't put on the laptop. Why can't I move it? I'm just giving examples of fences that the Torah, that the Chachamim made throughout the generations. Where did they get the authority for this? So the Rambam right away says, this is airtight. They heard this from Moshe explicitly. Shenemar, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ushmartem es mishmarti. Ushmartem es mishmarti. It's a very interesting redundancy here. You should guard my mishmeres. Asu mishmeres limishmarti. You should create a system that protects that which I want you to be protected from. Ushmartem es mishmarti means there's certain things I want you to be nishmer from. I want you to be protected. These are hazards. These are not good for you. You could make a fence around it to protect somebody from getting stuck and lured into this act. That's the basis why the sages and prophets throughout the generations made different fences. Where are you going to learn about this? Where are you going to know about this? It was all written down in the two Talmud, Talmud Bavli Yerushalmi, which includes the Mishnah, of course, and the other texts that the Rambam discussed, Tosefta, Sifra, Sifri, and of course the other texts he mentioned earlier, which are Brises, Toras Koyanim. V'chein, not yet, we're not done yet. Yisboyer mehem, you'll also learn something else about Judaism. Hamin hagois, v'hatakonois, shehiskinu, oishenagu b'chol dor v'dor, k'mashiro, bezdin shaloisi hador. The customs and the institutions that they instituted, or that became a custom in every generation, based on the court, on the Sanhedrin of that generation, lufisha asur losur mehem, because one is forbidden to depart from them. Shenemar, the pasuk tells us, loy sasur min hadavar asher yagidu lecha yamin usmail. Do not depart from the law that the Bezdin will share with you, whether it's going to the right or going to the left. So Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people in Dvarim, Perik Yud Zayin, Lysosor, Minatovash, Yegidu L'cha Yom HaNasmol, because if Moshe Rabbeinu didn't tell it to us, where is there an authority here? So in addition to the fences that they made, things not to do, there's also takonos, things that they instituted, and minhagim, the traditions and customs that they instituted, which Moshe Rabbeinu tells us, don't depart from this. He gives them the authority to make these institutions, and he tells the Jewish people, you should follow these. V'chein mishpatim, one more thing, v'chein mishpatim, people wonder what's the difference of takanos and minhagim. The Rambam introduced here three things. It's important to understand this. Gzeiros, takanos, and minhagos. Gzeiros are edicts of things we do not do to protect us from violating a biblical prohibition. The example would be chicken and milk. Another example would be muktzah on Shabbos, or various rabbinic prohibitions of things we don't do on Shabbos, even though the Torah doesn't prohibit it. But the rabbis prohibited it as a fence. Those are called gzeiros. Takonos are mitzvahs that the rabbis instituted in Jewish life, even though they're not biblical. An example, lighting Shabbos candles. Lighting Shabbos candles doesn't say in Chumash, you don't have to light Shabbos candles. It was an institution of the rabbis to strengthen the institution of Shabbos. They instituted a mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles, or reading the Megillah on Purim, or sending gifts on Purim, right? These are called mitzvahs de Rabbanan, takanos that prophets and sages instituted. They instituted a fast day on Tisha B'Av, on Shivasa B'Tammuz, on Asara B'Tevis, Tzom Gedalia. Torah doesn't say to fast on Tisha B'Av, this is before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. These are takanos that they made. You have minhagim. Minhagim are institutions in Jewish life. I'll give an example. People, for funerals, they would carry out the corpses decorated in beautiful, beautiful clothes. And as the sages put it, ironically, that some people, worse than the death, was the expenses that they had to deal with for the funeral. So Rav Gamliel instituted that when he dies, they should take him out in simple white shrouds, tachrichim, to eliminate this headache and this chaos, and that becomes a minhag. It's not obligated in Jewish law, but this became an institution of how Jewish life should exist. These are different types of minhagim. Okay, next. How do you know about all these things? Whether it's takanos, minhagim, gzeiros, the Rambam says, you learn these gemaras and all these texts, you'll find out. Next. V'chein mishpatim v'dinim uflayim shalei kiblu mimayshah. Here the Rambam gives us the next category. there are many laws that Moshe Rabbeinu did not teach the Jewish people. It's not written in Chumash, nor did he give an oral tradition. And yet, these were situations that came up. You don't have in Chumash or in the traditions of Moshe Rabbeinu every single verdict about every single circumstance that will arise in Jewish life. First of all, there are things that didn't happen in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, based on the progress of science and physics and technologies. New situations come up. Also, so many different cases and situations that simply couldn't be contained in the text of Chumash and even in the tradition that he gave over, notwithstanding the enormous quantity of mitzvahs and their explanations. So what happened? Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Jewish people a formula. The constitution of Chumash, the constitution of Torah, has also with it the methodology of how to use the text in order to deduce laws for all new situations and circumstances. A court can't just get up and say, you know what, let's make this the Torah law. There's no anarchy in the Jewish tradition of halacha. This is maybe the most critical, one of the most critical points here. So Nishkin Hefkevel, there's no anarchy. There's no such a thing. A rabbi gets up one day and says, you know what? I don't like this. Let's prohibit it. Oh, I like this. Let's make this new mitzvah. I think this will become the new Torah law. Some people, erroneously, they don't realize how it works. So they think it happens this way. There's no such a thing. That's why the Rambam will not stop with this tradition, this way and that way, up and down, because everything has to be accounted for. Where did he get this from? What's the source? How did it develop? What year was this instituted? Who instituted it? What were the reasons for it? Who was the authority behind it? Who took a vote? Because this is essential to the absolute integrity and immune system of halacha. So Moshe Rabbeinu gave a formula. They're called Shloish Esrei Midas. Midas Shatayr Nidreshes. Midas Nidreshes means the measuring sticks by which you can expound Torah. There's 13. One is called Kal V'chaymeh, Gzeirah Shavah, Binyanav, Klal V'prat, Prat U'Klal. We say it in the morning. 13 principles through which you can take the text of Torah and deduce from it the law for all types of circumstances and situations. Now, a lot of them will be debated. In other words, because we're using our minds to deduce the laws based on the principles, it's not black and white. That's why the Mishnah and the Talmud are filled with so many debates. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have just said clearly what the law is, nobody debates if tefillin should be black or red or white. There's no debate about that. There's no debate if on Sukkos we use an esrog, or we use a cherry, or we use a watermelon, or we use an orange, or we use a pumpkin. There's no debate about that. Why? I never heard of a Jew coming in Sukkos with a different fruit. He likes an apple. It says a beautiful fruit. No, I think apples are beautiful. There's no debate about that. But there's plenty of issues in halacha. There are debates. So people think it's just debate. It's not just. Something that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't say clearly and had to be deduced from the principles that he gave the Jewish people. Over there's a lot of room for disputations because people are using the principles coupled with their own minds. And here too, Moshe Rabbeinu gave a formula how to decide when there's a debate. How do you know what's right? What does God want? The answer is you usually follow the majority of the Sanhedrin. They had to take it to vote. So how do you know all the new laws that came up and what the sages concluded based on the formulas and the principles that Moshe Rabbeinu gave them? Here again, this is what the Rambam says. All of this, Reb Ashi, undertook a monumental task to compose it all and bring it together in the Gemara from Moshe until his day. Rav Ashi wanted to make sure that 1,800 years of Jewish tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu to Rav Ashi will not get lost. And everything will be put there. So let's summarize. What did Rav Ashi give us in the Gemara? What did he give us in the Gemara? Number one, he gave us an explanation of all the words of the Mishnah, understanding what the Mishnah says. And that means we have all the traditions that come from Moshe Rabbeinu, everything oral. We have it all in the Gemara. It's in the Mishnah, but the Mishnah is so concise and brief, the Talmud needs to unravel and explain. That's number one. Number two, all the edicts, all the decrees, all the fences that were created throughout generations. Number three, all the takanes and minhagim, the positive traditions and institutions that the sages and the prophets instituted in each generation. Moshe Rabbeinu authorizes the Beis Din to do all of this, because if not, they wouldn't have the authority to do this. This is not a man-made system. This is assistant that comes from Moshe Rabbeinu, from Hashem. So therefore, he gives them the authority. And finally, the last thing you're going to have in the Gemara is what? All of the new situations that came up throughout all the years, all the centuries, and the way Torah law, the system of Halacha, is applied to all these circumstances. The Talmud will bring everything up in its book, in its texts. V'chibru, says the Rambam. V'chibru chav k'meya mishne chiburim acherim lefarish divrei ha-Torah. The sages of the Mishnah, this is a generation of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, he goes now back, composed other works to explain the words of Torah. K'moy. For example, I said, the final, Reb Hoshia to Mishnah Rabbeinu HaKadosh chibur b'yir sefer bereshis. The student Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Reb Hoshia, we remember him because he composed Tosefta. He also composed an explanation on Chumash bereshis. Biur Sefer Bereshis. And this is very well known. We know it as Medrash Rabbah. Medrash Rabbah Bereshis, which is a commentary of the sages on Sefer Bereshis. This is also comes from the time of the Mishnah. Rabbi Shmuel, Pirish Me'ela Shmois at Sefer Teirav Anikr Mechilta. Rabbi Shmuel, one of the great Talmudic sages who lives after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, before Rabbeinu HaKadosh, he composes a book called Mechilta. This is a commentary from the beginning of Shmois all the way till the end of Torah. V'chein Rabbi Akiva chibur Mechilta. Rabbi Akiva also composed a sefer called Mechilta. Today we call it Mechilta de Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. But this comes from Rabbi Akiva. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was a student of Rabbi Akiva. V'chachamim acherim acherim chibru medrashas. V'akol chubur kedem ha-Talmud ha-Bavli. Other sages composed other medrashas. We spoke about Medrash Rabbah Bereshis, you have Medrash Rabbah Shmois, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Dvarim, Medrash Rabbah on different books of Nevi'im and Ksuvim, and other Medrashim, says the Rambam, by many sages, all before the Babylonian Talmud. Nimtza, summation. Ravina v'Rav Ashi v'Chavreim, Soiv G'doy L'chach Mi'Yisrael, Amatikim Torah Shabal Pe. Priceless words. Ravina and Rav Ashi and their colleagues, this is 40 generations from Moshe Rabbeinu, they are considered the end of an era. The end of the era of the greatest sages of Israel who are matik, who transmitted the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition. They are the ones responsible to capture and transmit Torah Shebaal Peh all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu to the Jewish people. Why does he say the end? So if it continues, we'll soon see what he means. V'shegazru gzeiris. They are the last ones to make decrees again that the Chachamim made in order to protect the Jewish people from biblical violations. V'hiskinu takonis. And they are the last ones to make institutions in order to strengthen Torah and mitzvahs, whether it's lighting candles, Shabbos and Yom Tov, whether it's reading Torah on Monday and Thursday, whether it's making an Erev, different types of things. I'm talking about an Erev Chatzeris, etc. Here we go, v'inhigu minhagos. They are the last ones to create traditions and customs that will define the traditions and the routines in the entire Jewish world. Whether it would be clapping an arava, a willow, on a shiny rabba, or it will be taking out a corpse in simple white shrouds. Minhagim that they instituted in Jewish life. Upashtu gzeiraisim betakanoisim minagoisim b'chol yisrael b'chol mekayim es mishvisei. And their decrees, their institutions, and their traditions expanded in all to all the Jewish people wherever they lived. And that's what he means, they're the soif. This is the last generation where they not only transmit the Torah Shebaal Peh, but they can make decrees and institutions and minhagim that will define the Jewish world universally. Everybody will follow it. After the court of Reb Ashi, remember, there's never one person. Reb Ashi is part of a group of a Bezdin. There's a lot of scholars. Shechibed Talmud, he composes the Talmud. V'gmaroi b'mei b'noi. And finished the Talmud in the days of his son. Reb Ashi began the process, but it was only finished in the days of Reb Ashi's son. Marber Reb Ashi's. When the Rambam said the Talmud Bavli was composed around 400 years after the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, around 470 after the Common Era, this is the beginning of it. But it continued. It didn't happen in one day or one year. It continued during the life of his son as well. So that means it continues perhaps into the 6th century. After this, Nispazru Yisrael b'chol ha'aratzis pizur yeser v'yiyu l'ktsovis u'liyim ha'richaykim v'rofsak tata b'olam v'nishtapshu adrochim b'gyosis. Very intense words. The Jewish people scattered into all of the countries around the world, even more dispersed than they were before, because we learned before that in the times under the Roman Empire, the Jews were exiled and scattered all over the place, but now it became even more extreme, to the point that they reached far remote locations and remote islands. And war increased in the world, conflict. And the ways, the roads, became completely overtaken by gyosis, by groups of robbers and thugs and terrorists. Basically, it became dangerous to travel. V'nismaya Talmud Torah. So the institution of learning Torah diminished. The concept that Jews should gather to learn in yeshivas in the thousands and the myriads, the way it used to be for so many generations, ceased. The infrastructure was not there. The opportunities were not there. Jews were all over the place. They were scattered. Traveling became difficult. There was war, violence, bloodshed. The Rambam says they could not support this life. This life was not feasible anymore. It was not attainable. Ella, what happens? Miskaptzim yichidim hasvidim asher Hashem koyri b'chol ir v'ir b'chol medina u'medina v'oiskim b'toyra mevinim b'chibur yach hachamim kulam v'yoydim yam derech ha'mishpote eichu. Individuals, he said, individuals, survivors, that God summons in each city, meaning those who felt the divine calling that they must uphold this sacred tradition to be able to ultimately change the world and revolutionize the landscape of planet Earth with the vision and the values of Torah, beginning with the Jewish people. So these few individuals, these Sridim, you see how they translate Sridim, individuals, the remnants whom God called would gather in each city and country and occupy themselves in Torah study and devote themselves to understanding the text of the sages and learning the path of judgment from them. This became more of an individual endeavor, a few here and a few here and a few there. They didn't have that cohesive and integrated system anymore. It was simply not possible due to the difficult circumstances and the sociological factors that pervaded the planet. And any Jewish court that arose after the era of the Talmud, which means after Reb Ashi, approximately in the year 500 after the Common Era, once you get to the next generation afterwards, the Gazar, even if this court made a decree, they realized that there is something very hazardous and they have to warn, they have to protect the people. Ayhiskin, or they made an institution. Ayhinik, or they made a custom. Libnei Medinasa, for the members of their country, or Libnei Medinas Rabbis, or maybe many countries. Loi Pashtu Maisav Bechol Yisrom Nerechik Meshvesem Beshibosh Adrachim. Their actions did not expand to all of the Jewish people because of the remoteness of the communities and the difficulty of travel. So there was no way that the message could travel, and the infrastructure was not there anymore to create that integrated unit. Since the court of that country are individuals, and the Bezdin HaGadol, the great Sanhedrin numbering 71, was already nullified and it dissolved years, a few years before the Babylonian Talmud was composed. So the Rambam says, lots of things happened. War increased. Jews were scattered everywhere. Travel became extremely difficult. There was a lot of violence and bloodshed and the roads became dangerous. Plus, there was no Sanhedrin anymore. There was no one central body, governing body of the Jewish people, which numbered 71, because already a few years before the composition of Talmud Bavli, which means according to the Rambam, somewhere in the 5th century, in the 400s after the Common Era, the Sanhedrin could not exist anymore. It had to be dissolved. Again, they didn't have that infrastructure for it. So now you don't have one central spiritual body of Sanhedrin that existed from Moshe Rabbeinu all the way almost till Reb Ashi for close to 2,000 years, the Sanhedrin is gone. What you do have is, in different communities, different countries, different communities, you have a Bezdin, you have Jews who dedicated themselves to the learning of Torah, to the understanding of Torah, to the elucidation of the texts. exploring, delving into, spending time and resources, not in the same magnitude, not with the same numbers, not with the same amount of teachers. You didn't have that. But they did have these individuals who were dedicated, and they had Bezdin, they would give the verdicts. So even when they made a decree or they made an institution, you did not have any more the central authority that combined all of Klal Yisrael. Because you didn't have Klal Yisrael, they were scattered. What you had was an individual Bezdin. So therefore, what happens? Lefichach, ein koifen anshe medina zu lina kaminik medina hacheres. We will not compel the Jews of one country to follow the standards and the laws of the Jews in another country. We're talking not about the laws that were received from Moshe Rabbeinu or subsequent generations. We're talking about the new ones that were instituted after the generation of the composition of Talmud Bavli. We will not tell this court to accept the same decree that another country in its country, another Bez, another court in its country made. A classic example for this would be Kitnius, right? In the Middle Ages, I don't know, what is it, the 12th century, the 13th century, maybe a little earlier, the Ashkenazic Jewish courts forbade eating Kitnius on Pesach, legumes on Pesach. We don't eat Kitnius. The classic example would be rice, corn, etc. And there was a reason for this, and that is that the rice paddies grew right near the grain, and they constantly saw that you're making rice, and inside the rice, there's mixed grain, and so you're cooking the grain and you have chametz on Pesach. So therefore, they made a prohibition that kitnius should be prohibited on Pesach. There were other reasons. This is not a universal Jewish tradition. There are Jews who eat rice on Pesach. Our holy Sephardic brothers. Why? This is a classic example, because it's not mentioned in the Talmud Bavli. It comes much later. This is already a generation after the Rambam. So therefore, Bezdin did it for the Jews in its province, but you don't force another Bezdin to follow suit. Not an institution to do something, and not a prohibition to abstain. It remains exclusive to this community of Jews. If one of the Gaonim is one of the great geniuses who lived subsequent to the composition of Talmud Bavli, taught that this is the right way to Paskin, this is the right law under these circumstances. Again, it's not something that's explicit. It's something that he had to deduce, or he had to use the pre-existing text in order to apply to different situations. So it's something that required innovation. Now there's another Bezdin that lived after him, and they decided that's not true. That's not the meaning in the words of the Talmud. Talmud says something. He said, this is how you have to learn it. This is how you have to apply this. After you do something, this is the meaning of the words. And they come and they say, it's not. You don't have to listen to the first one. Rather, you follow the one that this Bezdin, the new Bezdin, says, our logic of Torah gravitates to the interpretation of the latter court, whether it's latter or earlier, even if it's latter. In other words, his interpretation obligates those who live under him. But another Bezdin could completely disagree, have another interpretation, and both become valid interpretations, and they are not obliged by the other interpretation because they have to use their minds, and in their mind, this is not the meaning of the Talmud. And therefore, here we are suddenly becoming observers of a new phenomenon in Jewish history, and that is the same Torah Shebaal Peh, which is completely based on an airtight system of authenticity and integrity, can splinter into different traditions and variations throughout all of the countries. After the Talmud Bavli, there will not be any more a universal Jewish custom that doesn't come from earlier. Now, it's important to emphasize, 90% of Judaism remains exactly the same and universal, because everything till the Talmud Bavli obligates all Jews. There will not be a difference between Ashkenazim and Sfardim. Everything that's clearly recorded in the Talmud. The difference will be anything that was added in later generations, whether a decree, whether a custom, whether a mitzvah, whether an institution, whether a tradition, or an argument in how to interpret the Talmud. The Talmud is still ambiguous in many ways, even though the Talmud came to clarify the Mishnah. But in the times of the Mishnah was very clear. In the time of the Talmud, the Mishnah needed elucidation. Time of the Rambam, the Talmud needed elucidation. So they can argue what is the meaning of the Talmud. There'll be also an argument. But anything that is clear in the Gemara, or that comes from previous generations and is recorded in the Gemara, there will not be an argument. And the Rambam is explaining what happened after the composition of the Talmud Bavli. This ends a special era in Jewish history. And this is the era where you have the great sages who not only transmit the tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu, but they also have the authority to make the decrees and to institute things based on the formulas of Torah, only based exclusively on the instructions of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it will become universal Jewish tradition and custom. I'm going to take a few questions.